America Meditating Radio Show. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts 24/7. Hi, I'm Sister Jenna. Join me and guests on Blog Talk Radio as we amplify stories that compel us to be more for ourselves and everyone else around us.
The entire world watched.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
And humanity saw that the sky was not the limit. Achievement. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
The Azar Foundation for Children of the World is an organization aimed to support women and children in need across the globe. We believe in empowering lives, strengthening minds, and providing programs that enrich health and education. The Azar Foundation was founded in 2003 and has been serving the world ever since. Visit us at our website at www.azarforchildren.org. That's www.azar4children.org to find out more information about our endeavors and join our mailing list. Remember, the smile and the cry of a child doesn't have any language. The Azar Foundation.
Do you like to meditate? Have you tried to meditate? Have you struggled with meditation? Why don't you visit one of the Brahma Kumaris Meditation Center? Visit brahmakumaris.org.
Blaylock Dialysis Center is a convenient state-of-the-art dialysis center in the Houston area, run by Dr. Panakin Patel. Relax in a comfortable environment while receiving quality care. Serving adults 18 to geriatrics, we are here to help you. Call 713-463-6611 for more information or visit us at our website at www.blaylockdialysiscenter.com. Blaylock Dialysis Center, where helping you get well is our priority. Join the prominent motivational speaker and teacher, Sister Jenna, on America Meditating Radio as she talks with celebrities, leaders, authors, and average people who share stories of success and inspirational ways to combat negativity and everyday challenges that we may encounter along our journeys of life. Tune in daily, 24/7, right here on America Meditating Radio.
America Meditating Radio Show. Tuning to love as we grow.
Today I compliment others. Sometimes we forget to value those around us. But today I will say something kind to each person that I come into contact with. Today compliment you, compliment me, and compliment the world around.
Just close my eyes again, climbed aboard. aboard the dream weaver train. Try to take away my worries of today and leave tomorrow behind.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to America Meditating Radio. I'm your host, Sister Jenna, and we're broadcasting from the beautiful Meditation Museum, yay, in the nation's capital. That was Gary White's oldie but goldie, Dreamweaver. And always happy to hear a shout-out from my wonderful friend Kristen Hoffman, who's a wonderful entertainer, and I would really encourage anyone to really look for her songs and attain them. They're just beautiful music. So the journey continues, and we are surviving our past. And it's something that sometimes feel we wish we could have changed. Sometimes when we look back at our past, we feel that we could have done better. And sometimes when we look back at our past, we feel that that other person didn't even value or honor or wasn't even thinking based on what they actually did to us or for us. Because that's now the languaging that we're using, that nothing is happening to you, but it's happening for you to gain deeper insights on who you are and what you are here to do. So when we join the America Meditating Radio Show, we are acquiring tools, tools that are making us better people, making us be ourselves. We've been given so many masks and so many different aspects of being ourselves, and yet still the happiness and the love and the peace and the power, we're always finding that there's more room required for growth. Thank you for joining us on America Meditating Radio. We have now launched a new initiative called Meditate the Vote. Meditate the Vote. When you hear Meditate the Vote, what do you think about? I think you think about it's time to meditate because this voting election is really putting a lot of fear in us. And I think that it's actually so apropos that we have been given three candidates that represent three levels of consciousness. And we now, as citizens of this great land, are being invited to have a higher conversation, engage in a deeper meaning of who we are and why we show up. Whether you're from the East Coast, the West Coast, or the middle of America, you still eat, you still sleep, you still breathe, and you still wish to be happy, and you don't wish any harm
on the for the people that you love. And so Meditate Devote is about choice. It's about being informed. It's about getting enough information about what's important to you. Let's take an example, healthcare. It's a big card that we've always placed on the table that a candidate will say that I will definitely lower the cost in healthcare. It's been decades later, presidents upon presidents. Healthcare is still high. It's even higher than ever before, right? So here's how I'm looking at Meditate the Vote when it comes on to healthcare. Eat greens, drink more water, exercise, have positive thoughts. I've just voted for better healthcare, and I've just voted to lower the cost in healthcare, because that means I'm going to be visiting the hospital less than I would if I was smoking, drinking, and didn't care a bit about what I was putting in my body. So I hope you have an idea of what Meditate the Vote is going to be merging into. We started on May 1st, and we are closing on November 8th. I know there's a lot of conversation that we can't close it now. There's way too much going on with Meditate the Vote, and I'm asking all of my beautiful fans and listeners, go to meditatethevote.com. I'd love to be your friend. Join us on Facebook and Twitter. I want you to give me a Meditate the Vote. I Meditate the Vote because I believe in peace. I believe in world harmony. I believe that my family deserves a chance. I believe in healthcare. I believe in just having a good time. And post that on your social media and hashtag it to us at hashtag Meditate the Vote. Also, just let us know by sending us an email or on our Facebook and Twitter. Guys, this has been changing the conversation. I was on a beautiful, beautiful interview with Reverend Welton Gutty. Belief. You've got to hear that interview. He basically said, I'd rather my party lose than put my country in harm's way and actually find ourselves in a really bad situation. So we're looking at this from beyond the political perspective. We're looking at this about our own lives, Meditate the Vote. So join us on that and call me if you've got any questions or shoot me an email and just say, I want some more information on what this is about. You joining us on America Meditating always means a lot to us. Stay tuned. We're going to have a very special conversation with Claire Hoffman, who works as a magazine writer living in Los Angeles, surviving a transcendent childhood. Journalist Claire Hoffman will join us on the air and tell us a little bit more about what she's been up to. And before I do, can I turn the lines to Sister Gita so that she can take us to another level? Sister Gita?
Good morning and Om Shanti. Today I vote the day. I vote that no matter what happened, I will maintain my enthusiasm. I just voted for the day. We vote every day, don't we? This is taken from The Gift of Peace, and it reads, for relationship, humanity is like a tree. Each human being is connected with the seed and belongs to the same tree. The beauty of the tree is that it has different branches, and on each branch, numerous leaves. All individuals are also different and have their own role to play. Think about what we have in common, and you will appreciate every human being in your life. This is a key to remain at peace. Good feelings for others are like ointments that heal wounds and reestablish friendship and relationships. Good feelings are generated first in the mind and are transmitted through your attitude and are reflected in your eyes and your smile. Smiling opens the heart, and a glance can make miracles happen. Vote for this. It will make your life a better one. Om Shanti. Good day.
Thank you very much. That was absolutely clear and powerful. Life's a journey. Claire Hoffman works as a magazine writer living in Los Angeles and writing for national magazines covering culture, religion, celebrity, business, and whatever else seems interesting. Claire was formerly a staff reporter for the Los Angeles Times and a freelance reporter for the New York Times. Claire has a master's degree in religion from the University of Chicago and a master's degree in journalism from Columbia University. She serves on the board of her family foundation, the Goldhurst Foundation, as well as the Columbia Journalism School. Now, her new book entitled Greetings from Utopia Park, Surviving a Transcendent Childhood, big topic. And today we are honored to welcome Claire Hoffman to the American Meditating Radio Show. Welcome, Claire.
Hello there. Hi, Sister Jenna. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, Claire. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. How are you?
Good, good. You know, I was raised in a spiritual community, and I know how unique that could be, growing up in a spiritual community.
I'm laughing because it really is an inside experience.
And I find it very fascinating because it's my karma. It was my karma that I ended up with parents who were seeking something bigger than themselves. I get that. And I get that there must be something in my own soul's story that was also either releasing a seek story, like something that I was seeking and was in, or had come to some tail end of my seeking. And so when I watched my own parents go through their metamorphosis, for me, though, I think it turned out pretty good, where I realized that whatever they were doing was really good for them. And in my 20s, I later began to realize, you know, this isn't really bad. And then in my 30s and my 40s, I was realizing, wow, spirituality, once you get it, it basically tells you, be a good person. You don't need to be locked up in an ashram. You don't need to be walking around with beads. You don't want to be projecting to other people that you're super ultra spiritual and now bow at my feet. Ridiculous. So this is where I am in terms of my in my understanding of spirituality. And I'd love to hear about your story and how have you evolved from just your own interpretation of your transcendent childhood.
I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of overlap there. You know, there's tricky parts of coming from a spiritual community and really wonderful parts. And, you know, when I was a kid, it was amazing. It was incredible to be a part of this group that felt like it was changing the world and to be at these celebrations and go to a school where every day felt really purpose-filled. You know, we were changing the world through meditation. We were changing our consciousness. And I felt really plugged into that, and it felt fantastic. And when I was a teenager, that started to change for me, you know, more like actually 12 years old, so young, like going through puberty. And stuff really just started to not adding up for me. And I started to experience doubt and cynicism. And that wasn't so great. You know, and that lasted for a long time, and it's something I still grapple with. It's hard to come back to belief, you know, after having been so connected and having felt, you know, how warm it feels inside to be a part of something like that, and then to be pushed out in some ways in the cold. And doubt is, you know, it's a really tough emotion. So, you know, and then I did go back as an adult, you know, after I had kids. And I tried to find the value there, to kind of put the doubt and cynicism aside. I felt sort of exhausted by it, and to find things that worked for me. You know, not everything, certainly, but some of the stuff felt really valuable for me. And, you know, I mean, the main practice and part of that community that I do stay connected with is meditation. That's sort of the primary thing that I've held on to.
Now, I understand what you're saying. I know what that's like to. I haven't felt it personally, but I intuitively have a very clear idea about what it's like to, and this is how I'm going to position it. Inside of our souls, there's constant change going on in our energy and in our personality. Stuff from our past lives and energy of our present life existence that's, you know, triggering thoughts inside, and then the future that's waiting for us, those kids we're waiting for you. And what happens, it's like it's not matching the fortress of awareness that I was just so conditioned to believing in. And you know how happy ashram life is and how beautiful. We all know what it's like when everyone is just so happy. And there are issues too, but who cares? We just, you know, sweep it under the rug and go, that's just personality issues. But when you start to feel like I'm either outgrowing this, or something happened to me inside which doesn't feel right anymore, or just the world in general is now calling me to say, but you haven't felt this. How do you know if this is the real deal, right? And then you go outside of that, and then when you start to settle into your other life, your life of a mother and this and that and work, in those quiet moments, you start to find yourself remembering those special sacred times back in the ashram, back in the temple, back in those days. And you go back to it saying, wow, I want to feel that again, but you're not the same person. So it can be a very, right? Am I speaking right to you right now?
Yeah, it's very true. And when you say those quiet moments, I mean, I think for me, different than necessarily growing up in a religious community, although there were elements of that, that quietness, you know, because I started meditating at such a young age, that quietness really was who I understood myself to be. And living in sort of urban America with a family and working and being very sort of technologically wired in, it was really hard to connect to that quietness. And that, so that sense of self was almost wrapped up, you know, I mean, that sense of self was very close to the meditation for me, if that makes sense.
It does. You know, we've got a lot of children that come here with their parents, and I'm a very strong advocate to inform them, keep them engaged. You know, life is about how much good you can do. And this is just my interpretation, Claire. My understanding of meditation today is get rid of all your negative and waste thoughts and you're a meditator. You're doing good. Because when you meditate, you're healing something inside that doesn't feel good. I know some of us think we're emptying, we're going into the abyss, it's abstract, we're in a world of light. But that doesn't connect to the world here when I need bills to be paid. I need a relationship to respond to me. I need to dress appropriately for a particular occasion. And so with children, I think I find it very, very important to keep sharing, okay, good that you sit in silence, maintain positive thoughts, but now what would you like to do? What are your skills? Let me see how you're painting. Let me see your writing skills. I mean, was that something that you would offer as a balancing tool for children who might be looking at meditating?
Yeah, it's such an interesting, that's an interesting question. I mean, for me, with my daughters, I see the way that emotions, you know, especially their little girls, emotions can really overwhelm them and overtake them. And they get very sort of caught up in the feelings and the moment and the energy. And I see meditation as a way for kids their age to take a step back. You know, that's what it was for me. You know, I started meditating when I was 3 years old, and there was a lot going on with my family. It was very chaotic. My parents were getting a divorce. My dad was an alcoholic. And for me, meditation was this space that I was allowed to have from everything that was happening around me. It gave me a little distance, and it gave me that quietness and stability when it was lacking. And I see that for my daughters. I mean, they have a much more comfortable life than I did, but that space, I think, is still important to understand the separateness, or not the separateness, but the, yeah, just the space between you and your feelings.
So I know that you've got a book. Congratulations.
Yes.
And
thank you.
I know it's always a, you're welcome. It's always huge to get a book out, because I know that now there's so many authors in America especially. And to get coverage and to get that energy in the hearts of people requires these kinds of conversations. Your new book is called Greetings from Utopia Park. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about the book and why you decided to actually write it?
Yeah, thank you for asking me that. It's I have been thinking about this book for a long time in different ways. But, you know, Utopia Park, just to tell you, was the meditators-only trailer park that I grew up in. And it was a 200-home trailer park just on the campus of Maharishi University in Fairfield, Iowa. And, you know, for me, this book is, I felt it was important to share this story because I think people, the conversation around religion and spirituality tends to get very black and white and has a lot of judgment around it. You know, people really want to put things in, you know, two boxes, you know, logical, illogical, you know, and I just, for me, having grown up the way I did and then going on to divinity school, I felt like there wasn't a nuanced conversation of, first of all, what it is like to believe something and how powerful that belief is, how it can completely transform your reality and how real that is. And you know, no matter what the belief is, you know, if you believe it, it's there, it's happening. And then also what that experience is like to come out of it, to have that belief sort of fall apart and to end up in a place of cynicism and not have that be the end of the story. I feel like it so often is, you know, it's either I was in and then I was out. And I think that life is much messier and much more complicated than that. Friends who are grown up in, you know, like every different kind of religion, and everybody is trying to figure out, you know, what is their connection to the cosmic? You know, how do they connect back into themselves? How do they understand themselves in this world? And where is the opportunity for them to think about that, to be with other people talking about that, that feels right, and it doesn't feel like you have to join a group, you know, or, you know, be on the other side and say, like, you know, there is no God and science is the only language that is logical. And for me, like, I really feel like I have a lot of those conversations where people are sort of like, oh, well, you're so well educated. How can you possibly think that what you grew up with made sense? And I think it's really kind of not very, I don't understand why people have a hard time understanding how big belief is and how powerful and how it can be really a force for good as well as not, you know? So for me, writing this book, yeah, the book was really about that ending in the position of seeking and having that be sort of a permanent position. You know, I felt like the real challenge that I see for both, you know, my mom's generation and also for people my age now who are trying to sort of constantly improve themselves is that everyone seems to think that there's going to be an answer, that there is an ideal self that they will achieve, that they will, if they work hard enough, if they meditate enough, if they exercise enough, if they're healthy enough, there's this striving. And I feel like it's a beautiful emotion and feeling, but it often can be, you know, your undoing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think I often, you know, people ask me all the time, you know, should I meditate? Will that help me? Will that change my life? Will that change this, you know, voice in my head that won't stop talking? And, you know, I say, you know, meditation will help you. It is, it's a wonderful thing. I love meditating. But, you know, giving up on the idea of changing yourself might also help.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that is so true, right?
It's
right?
Tricky because you don't want to be complacent, and
exactly.
You don't want to, you know, just sit and not do anything. And there's a real nobility to it, and yet that there is like that self-loathing part of it that I think people really need to turn around and look at. I see
which
it
we've all
so
been
often.
Through. And
yeah.
You write in your book that while there is no utopia on Earth as such, there are noble goals that are worth striving for. And let's say you've got a 20-year-old listening to the show today. What are some of these noble goals that you would suggest to them to at least put it on their bucket list?
Because I like goal setting. You know, I think it's really about being conscious in your world and not automating your behavior and continuing to question, but also allowing yourself to be connected and giving yourself up to these experiences that can be strange and new and unusual, but that can change you, and allowing that to happen. So I think being connected is a really important goal, figuring out a way to be connected to other people. And I don't mean virtually. And I think wanting to change yourself and change the world, you know, those are dreams that should not be given up.
Mm-hmm.
But understanding that there's a part of that that is motivated by self-criticism and discomfort, and using that discomfort to connect back to yourself instead of trying to escape it, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. Can I ask you something very private? And I know we've been having a very private conversation. Do you think all this spiritual stuff, all this spiritual jargon, you know, temples, meditate, drink healthy, be like this.
Right.
I mean, is it still good for us? or is it that we've gotten a lot of people now who are spiritual entrepreneurs, and as a result, they've kind of taken the attention of a lot of people, and so the real sincere soul seekers are not even seen anymore on the platform. They're just like just the guy next door who's just living a good life. Like, what do you feel?
Right.
I mean, is spirituality really, does it work? I know those are two big questions.
Yeah, I mean, spirituality, I keep wanting to find a new word, you know, because it's used to say so much. You know, I personally am very allergic to a lot of the spirituality trappings. So for me, even seeing somebody stand on a stage and sort of like literally physically elevate themselves above everyone else and turn back and say, this is how life is, this is what it means, I can't be around that. You know, after what I grew up with, I can't handle it. And I felt like, you know, one of the things that I understood later on was that we, you know, with Maharishi, he was our guru, and it was almost like things got strange, but it was almost in some ways, you know, our fault or the community, because we wanted so much of that stuff. You know, the questions, he didn't start out saying, you know, this is how you should eat, and this is how many bites you should take per minute, and this is the temperature of the water, and this is the food that you should eat in February, and this is the food you should eat in July. But by the end, everything had been prescribed. And there is that desire in people to have that, to order things, to restrict themselves. It's such a natural part of the religious impulse. And yet, I think it is sort of counter to that pursuit of happiness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's more of that striving that can be about self-loathing. So,
yeah. You
know, in terms of spirituality, I think, you know, it's really about examining, you know, turning back and examining yourself always and thinking about what your motivations are and questioning with love, but really questioning that, because I find so beautiful the people I meet, you know, that are really regular people who've just been meditating for 50 years, and there's not a lot of outward signs of it, but it's a practice, and maybe they connect with other people, but it's just something that they keep up. It's not something that they kind of run ragged to its end game with the clothing and the jewelry and, you know, the oils. You know, that stuff. But everybody does it their own way. You know, I mean, I also am like, if that works for you, fantastic. Like, if that oil makes you experience, like, something sublime, then by all means, use the oil. You know, you just have to kind of do you and not get too distracted by all the trappings, if you know what I mean.
I do. And I think that's where I think at the end of the day, you have to think for yourself, too. Yes, we need our tribe. I mean, we connect to each other because of certain things we have in common or certain things that we find so intriguing that perhaps we go, oh, my, I would love to learn or do this or figure that out or, you know, whatever are the reasons that we actually come together. But yes, I think at the end of the day, you have to think on your own. Got to tell you a joke. Many, many years ago, many, many years ago when I was in my spiritual path, still am. So everyone thinks I'm like God, Claire. I mean, who would just follow behind me? They would be worshiping, bowing down, and I'd be like, oh, my God, I've got something here, right? So, like, after my... I'm being honest.
Yeah,
after my first,
incredible.
Like, 5 years... there's like a lot of something going on. It's clear that something is opening up in my consciousness and just the radiance. And you've seen it. You've seen when anyone just radiates because they're just in their zone of divinity. But sometimes that radiance is challenged by one's egos or attachments, and then it becomes really like, whatever happened to that brilliance? So I'm sitting in my meditation room, which I call my Baba's room, because Baba means dad. And I'm looking at Baba's light, because for us, God is a supreme being of light. And so that's my connection. That's my love here. We're all agents, but you know what? The source is what's going to give me the power to move on with life. And I'm telling Baba Claire, I know they all think I'm like great in God, but I don't feel that. I still want to go party and have fun and do silly things. You know, and there was a time, Claire, I just projected that. I projected what you said I was. But inside I was being deceitful. And that moment of being honest with myself and with God, I was so perfect. And after that, I didn't care if my sari was wrapped upside down, if there was a pink stain on it, or if it had a hole. It was like, I'm good. I'm fine now. And I think that for those of us who come into spirituality, the greatest enemy is of the ego, of trying to project yourself to be greater than God, one. And so you've seen how that dominates people. What was once their good intentions and sincerity becomes a monster. So somewhere along the path, you're going to have to be really super honest and go, this isn't it.
Yeah.
So the second thing is that you might have to tell yourself, one of my meditations, I go, I am not even a Brahma Kumari. I'm just me. I'm just a soul.
Mm.
And when I started to do that, I can't begin to tell you how free I felt. Even though I'm still a Brahma Kumari practicing my tradition and my spiritual culture, which I love, it's not holding my identity. It's no longer, it's not my trap anymore to define my worth. My worth is how I deal with you, the guy next door, the man across the street, and how I deal with Jen. Now, does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it's beautiful. I think there is a liberation saying, you know, who am I? It doesn't, you know, to let go of the ego. And ego is tricky. It always comes back, you know? And I felt like with Marishi, it's a big sort of question for me. You know, my mother and everyone that I grew up with loved him so much. You know, I mean, they just, he was like a god among men. You know, it was, their experiences with him were transformative and changed their lives. And I like want to honor that and understand that. But then there's the part of me as a journalist that, you know, examined him and saw him as very much human. And I actually felt like some of that, you know, some of the mistakes that were made were because of that ego, the humanness. And it seemed like such a thing that he must have grappled with, you know? And I think it's also interesting to think about, you know, like for you, like the people who are following you. I mean, there's a sort of one level of where they just want what you have. You know, they want that that they see reflected back at them. But I also think it's again, this thing of discomfort with self that you think, like, I don't like this part of me. I want to be this sort of seamless, radiant being that is not human. And I actually feel like that's one of the most human impulses, you know, to shed yourself of your humanity.
Oh, yeah. And I think that, if you don't mind me interjecting, when a person who's on a spiritual path, who perhaps many find inspirational. Let me tell you, to all of you listening in today, and to all of you who might be thinking that you need to be a life coach, motivational speaker, transformational agent, leader, all of those good things, set yourself up, and putting yourself on a pedestal, that when your human side comes, they will drown you, and then you start to walk around self-deceived, thinking that they're the problem and you're a God incarnate. And I'm really sharing that with a lot of honesty and openness. And so a lot of people sometimes get shocked at the way I behave. I go, but why? I'm not telling them anything godly. I'm just like you. Maybe my only difference between the both of us is that I'm in touch with my weaknesses and I'm working them through. I have no idea, but that's just where I am, and I'm so comfortable with that. And I think that when we advocate that in the way that we live our lives, we're going to stop this delusional way of capitalism, because now it's such a big thing of people making money on people's personality. For what reason, I don't know. But to be you, and the people that are with me, nobody's a follower of me. We're friends traveling on this journey together. And so I love the fact that we're all like in support, how we can help each other to shine because we have our own gifts, and how I can keep shining because I also come with my own gifts. And I feel that that languaging, that level of spirituality is what God would have wanted on the earth.
That's really, it's amazing. It's very rare to have that sort of self-recognition.
I think it's important. I've loved having you on the air. Wow. Do you ever come to Washington, D.C.?
I hope I will for this book. I will look you up.
Well, if you ever want to do a book signing at the museum, you're most welcome to use the venue. I love your energy and the work that you're doing, hun, and totally understand you. You speak to me. I get that.
thank you.
You're welcome. Before I let you go, leave me with your favorite life quote that perhaps you're living by at this time. And, hey, I'm not sure if you heard the beginning of the show. I've launched a new campaign, Meditate the Vote. We're really raising the consciousness there, and I'd love for you to participate in sharing that on your social media as well.
I heard it and I loved it. I thought it was fantastic and totally refreshing. You know, Flannery O'Connor is one of my favorite writers, and she said, "I write to discover what I know." And that has really been my path to understanding is writing. You know, I mean, I wrote this book in order to kind of unpack what happened. And so that's one of my favorite quotes.
Oh, that's beautiful. Now leave us with a website that we can find you or get a copy of your book.
Yeah, you can go to my website, which is clairehoffman.com, and there's a page there that will take you to many different choices of book venues, and it comes out June 7th, but pre-order it now.
Love it. Love it. Well, Claire Hoff, thank you so very much for your spirit and continued love and lots of good wishes.
Thank you, Sister Jenna.
You're welcome. All the very best. Take good care. So much in our journey, my friends, and we could actually change. We can actually change our thoughts and change the way that we think we want to show up in a particular relationship or circumstance or even spiritual practice. It's entirely up to us. It's entirely in our hands. I just always accept that change is inevitable. So we're sometimes physically, the space, the parts of stuff is happening. It's up to us to still do our own thinking. So I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Claire Hoffman. And remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And we are here to love each other the same. So I'm going to end with Flying Free from Bliss's CD. Take care.